Yep. Now the Gemara goes further. Tashma. Dunin Elu Keneged Elu. They debate this side against that side. What's that talking about? So Rashi explains, Hechad the Nechaku Bedin, when they've disputed, there's a dispute. We're not taking that whole issue up now. They keep, they Shloshim Meshisha Machaivin. This would be a case of the Bezdin Hagadol, you know, the so-called Supreme Court of 71. So you have a deadlock. It's a capital case. We haven't gotten into the issue which, what's the jurisdiction of the Bezdin HaGadol, but that doesn't really matter. This is the illustration. So you have 36 mechayvim and 35 acquitters. The Kaimelon, and we have a problem over here because of our principle, Ein Matan L'chova Al Pi'echad, that you can't convict with a majority of one. So what do you do? Done in Barayo Sehen, so they debate with their proofs, up and back, Elu Keneged Elu, this side against the other side, to see if somebody, that's the whole idea of deliberation. Keep arguing your point, arguing, arguing, until you can bring about some kind of a resolution. Ad Sheyachzor Bo Echad Min HaMechayvim, until one of the Mechayvim will change his position. Because that's all you need. If you can change the position of one of the Mechayvim, so then it's a win for the other side.
Not necessarily.
If you can change it over to Schus. So then you have a majority. For Schus, all you need is a majority.
Wow.
Right? So you have 36 versus 35. It's easier to acquit. You get one of the 36. The 36 Mechayvim. You get one of them to change, and you have an acquittal. Because now it's 36-35 the other way, and for acquittal you need a simple majority of one. The Havalahu Mazakin Ruba. So then you'd have the Mazakin in the majority. Avolachzavo Echad Min HaMazakin Lokatan. So that's a problem. He did not, why didn't he say Dunin Elu Keneged Elu? What he said was that they debate this side versus the other side until you get one of the Mechayvin to change. And that will resolve it. But that's all he said. So what do you deduce from this? Yeah, so what's the problem? Avolachzavo Echad Min HaMazakin. But there's another, it would seem, another alternative to reaching a resolution. And that is, you can reach a resolution in two ways. You can reach a resolution for acquittal, as we just mentioned, by getting one person to change. And similarly, you can get one person to change a different way. One of the Mazakin to become a Mechayvin, and that would give you the majority of two. Because you already have a majority of one. But he only mentions one possibility of resolution, which would be to get one of the Mechayvin to change to be a Mazakin. Why did he only mention that possibility? Well, haven't we already learned that the Melamed Schus is not Chos or Melamed Chov? And now we're talking about Gemar Din. This is the Gemar Din. Because we already have votes. We're trying to steal it. And we only mentioned one possibility. So why didn't we mention the other possibility? That one of the Mazakin can become a Chayvin. Must be, you must deduce from that, that the principle of the Mishnah, that the Melamed Chos is Eino Chos or Melamed Chov, is not just Halach in the Masumatan, the deliberations, but carries all the way through until the actual Gemara Din. Now let's see Rashi. So Rashi spells it out for you. Aval Lachzabo Echad Min HaMazakin, but a change. One of the Mazakin to change his position, Lo Katani. He didn't teach that in the Mishnah. V'yamisa, v'bigmar den yachal lachzor, ulalam eit chovam. And if it is true, if it exists, so to speak, is means yes. And if it is true, that Gemara din. He can change and become an Olam Echov. Nisnei Nami Ipcha. He should also teach the other possibility. V'neima and say, oh, Echad min hamazakin as Divrei HaMachayvin, or until one of the Mazakin will see, will agree with the words of the Machayvin, the Ikatia L'ra Al Pishnayim, in which case you will have a conclusion of conviction Al Pishnayim, which is what we require. Now getting back to the Gemara, the way the Gemara expressed it, via Miso, and if it is true that you can change from Schus to Chovet Gemara Din, listening Nami Ibcha, let him teach the opposite. So what's the answer? Tana Aschus Kamahader, Achova Lo Kamahader. Yeah. So what is the meaning of this? So take a look at Rashi. Tana Aschusa Nichila Ilah Dure Umisni Mishum Lishnim Alya. That is to say, in writing up the Mishnah and constructing the case and then illustrating it, he wants to illustrate it in a favorable kind of a light, in the light of Schus. I guess it has something to do with the style. That's the objective of the Tana. He wants to compose the Mishnah in a manner in which the example that he chooses is one where the resolution will be blissful. However, the principle is there. This is what the Rav would be saying. Those who defend Rav's position would be saying that this is not a proof against me, the fact that that other case wasn't included, because you're talking about the including the possibilities, the illustrations of the resolution. And the basic idea of the resolution is that the two sides will debate until a hatia can be established. So you have two hatios. One is the hatia l'tov, which would only require one of the machayim to change. The other is the hatia l'ra, which would require one of the mezakin to change. He only mentioned one possibility, not because the other one doesn't exist, not because it's impossible at this point for the mezakin to change, but simply because he wanted to utilize the illustration of a positive resolution. However, the principle of the idea is that you keep debating up and back until you achieve a majority. And once you understand that, you can apply it to the other case. Really, it gets down to an argument. The Makshan is saying that the omission, the failure to mention the possibility of changing from Schus to Chov, why did the Tana leave it out? Because it doesn't exist. That would seem, generally speaking, that would seem the stronger of the two sides. The answer of the Gemara, who's the defending Rav, is that no, really he yells that way, but he doesn't want to mention that side. He just wants to mention the side of Schus. Schus Kamahadar is, to me, much more difficult. You got to show a justification. However, our task is to understand both sides. From the classical approach, well, what's the Havamina? What's the Havamina would seem to be pretty easy. The difficulty over here seems to be the Maskara, the defenders, the Tana Sus Kamahadar. Well, what kind of an idea, what kind of a concept is that altogether? Secondly, if that is the case, if there is such an idea that you only utilize those illustrations that are positive, which I don't understand why. What's the point of that? We're talking about the law. This is not it's not a Musar book or whatever it is to try. We want to know what the facts are. Yeah, the truth. So, if that's the case, what's the idea of the Makshan? What's the Machlokas over here? What? Are you saying the Makshan didn't know that? The Makshan is completely unaware of that possibility. So what was his question? If you could simply say that, you could just get out of a question, which seems to be a very strong question, by saying, Aschusa Kamahadeh. He prefers to use illustrations of source. Right, we have to define both sides. Taking a look at the Rambam now. The Rambam in Perek Tes, Halacha Beis. Halacha Beis is a long halacha. And we talked about this whole issue where the Bezin is divided. So we're not going to go through the whole Rambam now. Higiyu l'shim v'yachad. If they've arrived at the number of 71, by adding Dayanim. So if they've arrived at the number of 71, Shloshim v'shisha, 36 are saying Zakai. Shloshim v'chamisha omrim chayev, 36-35 Zakai. Havei zeh Zakai. That's fine, because you just need a simple majority. Shloshim v'shisha omrim chayev. If 36 say chayev, v'shloshim v'chamisha omrim zakai, and 35 say zakai. So you can't acquit. You can't do zakai at this point, because you don't have a majority. You can't do chayev because you don't have a majority of two. Donim elu kinegrelu. That's what the Mishnah says. So they keep debating. Actually, yira echad mehen divrei chavero. Until one of them sees, accepts the position of his chaver, umezaken oso, and they're mezaken him, oh, mechayvim oso, or they convict him. So, a departure from the language of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah only included one case, and the Rambam has both possibilities. He condensed it a bit, because he didn't have to talk out, you know, extra words and say, until one of the Mechayvim sees the words, and you know, he just, by saying, until one of them sees the words of his Chaver, Umezaken Oso, that's one possibility. Okay, that's the one of Mahadrin Eschusa, that's fine. But he also says, oh, Mechayvim Oso. So, it would seem that there is a departure from the approach of the Tana. Now, interesting over here is that the one who says that the Tana, Alushna, Ma'alya Kamahadra, Ashusa Kamahader, is the one who's in defense of the position of Rav. Right? So that's the position of Rav. That is to say, if you maintain the position of Rav, you are forced to say Tana Ashusa Kamahadra. Otherwise, you're going to be refuted. The Rambam holds Paskins like Rav. That is to say that only in Masu Matan he can't change, but Peshas Mardin he can change. And nevertheless, in the formulation of his own halacha, does not seem to be following that principle, which is a principle that emerges that must be in connection with the one that maintains that at the time of Gemar Din, he can change. When the Rambam, parenthetically, when the Rambam says until one of them sees Divrei Chavero, questions being raised, that we've already learned that each dayan is obligated to state his own opinion and not to simply give up his own opinion and adopt somebody else's opinion. And the question being raised, and on the surface, does this not seem to be a violation of that? The answer to that is that until he sees, that is to say that you state your own position, but everybody else is stating their position, and you're supposed to listen to what the other person is saying. And you have the possibility of changing before Gemar Din. Certainly you have the possibility of changing. There's no argument from Chof to Schus. We paskin that you could change from Schus to Chof at the Gemar Din. Now, when you're deadlocked like that, and they keep debating, it's true that somebody may change his position, let's say from Chov to Schus, not because he accepts somebody else's, because he thinks of something entirely new. But that's not what the Gemara is talking about. Basically, by this time, the assumption is that pretty much all the positions are out there. There's different positions out there, and you keep debating what happens when there's three or four possibilities out there. Positions. So you keep debating them. Now, when it says until one person, it doesn't say until he changes, or it doesn't say he adopts the other person's. He sees. Sees means that you see that there's an element of honesty. That a person's supposed to retain an open mind and not to be wedded to his own position. Now, what happens over here is, if he, after the debate, thinks over his own position as opposed to the other position, and he says the other position makes more sense to me, and he therefore adopts that other position, that's perfectly fine. Then it becomes his position, by the way. It's like, you know, once you take a position, you can't give, well, I will, and then, you know, it gets refuted. And they say, well, it wasn't mine, it was somebody else's, it was my Rebbe's idea, somebody else's idea. You know, that's kind of like an escape. So, but once you accept it and argue it, it's your position. It doesn't matter where it came from, where it originated. Once you accept it, it's yours. I assume you accept it because it makes sense. That's fine. The prohibition that we learned about is to not have a position of your own and say, it's good enough for me to just, whatever he says, that's what I say. Even though I don't necessarily agree with it or don't necessarily understand it. That's a failure to assert your own psak. That's what we said before. To give a horah, which is not based upon your own, to give a psak, which is not based upon your own hachras, at then you have to not really do it in terms of your own mind, in terms of your own knowledge, that's your chiyuv. So here it is. Here it was done. Upon listening to your ideas, I thought it over. I decided that my idea was not correct. And I accepted your idea as the correct one. Because in terms of my achra, it makes sense to me. You have to ask yourself the question now to take the next step is, would the Rambam agree with this idea, with this answer? That the reason why the Tana omitted the statement of the Mazaka turning to Chov is only because Tana Aschusu Kamahader. Does the Rambam accept that idea? If he does, then one has to ask, so why didn't he follow the same method in his own code? We're taking up the question that's been raised with regard to the general issue of relations bein adam l'chaveru. And we know, in general, that there's a prohibition of afflicting another individual verbally. Put it a different way, are you allowed to make fun out of people in general? Is that just not a nice thing to do? Or is it more than just not a nice thing to do? Is it an avera? And if it is an avera, what's the heading? What's the category? The whole area is very, very serious, much more serious than it would seem people regard it. The behavior of people in dealing with others does not seem to be in line with the seriousness of the prohibitions and the consequences. For example, to embarrass somebody else, and certainly to embarrass somebody else publicly, is called malbin pnei chavero barabim, and one who does that is ein lo chelek liolam haba. So that's something, to embarrass somebody else publicly, that's something that the Beis Din would not even give him a punishment for. On one level, it doesn't carry any practical consequence in terms of punishment. On the other hand, it's so serious that a person would lose Olam Haba. Of course, I'm mentioning that when it says he would lose Olam Haba, that is to say, if he did not do tshuva. But if he did appropriate tshuva, then, as we've learned around many times, there's no other in the world for which the person will not have the possibility of doing tshuva, if he does do tshuva. The Rambam in paragraph V goes through different types of sins and the relationship they have to doing tshuva, different categories. That one who does them, for example, in this case, in Allah Adalah, there's a chasun like a chazakah that he won't do tshuva. Doesn't mean he can't do tshuva. He has different categories of the difficulty, to measure the difficulty of tshuva. So that's a very important parak to study. Yeah, the Rambam in Allah Adalah says, Umehen, and from the various sins, Chamisha Dvarim, there are five things, Ha'osa Osan, that one who does them, ain ches kasa losh of man. The chazaka, generally speaking, people that get into this don't do tshuva. So there must be, well, it's interesting. What does that mean? In any avera, the people that do averas, do they do tshuva or don't they do tshuva? Why is he mentioning these particulars? Do sinners, why don't we do a general study? Do sinners, is it in the nature of sinners to do tshuva or not? Why are you citing five? It means that there's different types of averos. Whether a person does tshuva or doesn't do tshuva is up to the person's free will. And many factors can affect it. But once a person didn't have Averis, and now he's in a different category. Will he be able to acknowledge it? Will he desire to acknowledge it? And the Avera itself has an effect. The very fact that he committed an Avera has an effect. So he becomes more rooted in the emotions, in the instinctual. That's true. That's a natural consequence of any Avera. But what the Rambam seems to be saying is that there's something in the nature of certain Averos that sort of entrenched a person. Once you fall into that pit, it's more difficult because of the nature of the Avera itself to pull yourself out of it. So that's extremely important, that a person not only has to know what's an Avera and what's not, but also has to be able to evaluate them from the standpoint of whether one can be chuva from them. It's an additional factor to consider. The person has to utilize every resource that he has in order to protect himself from the most dangerous thing, which is Avera. So that in addition to everything else, all the other reasons why a person should refrain from doing an Avera, a person should also consider this factor too. What is the path towards tshuva in an Avera? Now that's the type of calculation that people may take into consideration. Like a lot of times you get involved in certain businesses, or you take risks, or you do certain things, so you're always calculating, assuming it goes wrong, will I be able to rectify it? You do that in terms of friendships also. When, for whatever reason, you don't do what you should do with a friend, or you take a risk. You don't invite him somewhere, you should have, or that type of thing. You're too busy, you don't do a favor you were supposed to do, and you start to calculate, but not just in terms of, you know, how much of a burden it is, or whether you want to do it, or whether you can do it, but also, that also comes to mind, you know, I'll be able to get by, he'll get angry, but we'll get back together again. So the path towards tshuva is something which you also take into consideration.
Right.
That's something that should be taken into consideration in Avera too. I mean, you shouldn't be doing Averas, right? That's my idea. If that's the case, the person never does Averas, then there's nothing to talk about. But the Rambam does bring these down, these particular Averas, and he's warning you there's an additional reason why you have to be very, very careful in these Averas. After everything else is said and done, the path to tshuva is very, very difficult. Questions being raised on what I've just said, that the Rambam says that one of the things itself that prevents tshuva, well, in fact, it's not even considered to be tshuva. If a person says, I'm going to sin, and then I'll do tshuva for it.
Right,
it's not only ma'akev, it's not even considered to be tshuva.
Right.
Ech teva usher. So that tshuva is worthless. So, yet I'm saying right now that before a person does an avera, they should consider the path of tshuva. Does this not contradict what the Rambam is saying? Actually, that is the first halacha in Perek Revi, where he says that there are 24 things that are ma'akev, that hold back tshuva. Then he mentions four of them, he says. This is the first halacha. Is a great sin, avon gadol, v'ya'osa echad mehen, and whoever does any one of them, ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu maspik biyado la'asos tshuva. So God doesn't give him the opportunity to do tshuva, l'fi godel cheto, because of the greatness of his chet. Now the fourth of those are Yaomer Echtevi Ashav. That one who says, I will sin and I will return. But Bechlal Zeh included in this is Omer Echte, I'll sin the Yom Kippur Mechaber. And Yom Kippur Mechaber. Now the question arises to try and understand that. That's Ma'akev Tshuva. That is, the Rambam goes even further than just Ma'akev. It says that God doesn't give him the opportunity. How far is that an absolute? Or because God makes it difficult? Whatever, I don't know at this point, but whatever, it's something very, very serious. And one of those things is the person that says that I'll sin and I'll do tshuva. So let's analyze that. What is so evil about that? No matter, Shach, either that is true, but if the person sins and then he does, and he does do tshuva, if you're saying that that's not tshuva, so then that's something else, and then it's not that God doesn't give him the opportunity, then say something else, and merely say that's precluded, there is no tshuva there. On the other hand, if it is tshuva, if it's the real tshuva, so then what's so bad about it? Obviously it's bad, but why is it that serious? The question that we're asking is, an avera which was committed, performed, with that attitude in mind, that at the time that he did the aver, he was already planning the tshuva.
So then it's ma'akev tshuva.
It's ma'akev, but you're not saying that it's impossible. Obviously, it would seem that there is.
If he did tshuva, then it would be real.
Right, so now what tell us if that is the case? So why? What is so serious about such a approach? Turns out, according to this, that someone who sins without any intention of doing tshuva is on a higher level than someone who sins with the intention of doing tshuva. The answer is that a person that takes this attitude has broken down something which is very, very serious, and that is the seriousness of Vavera. It's a complete distortion, obviously, of the nature of Avera, but also of the nature of tshuva. It's like a game. It's like playing a game. A person with that mentality doesn't really have a concept of what true tshuva is, but he doesn't have a concept of what chet is. And he's taking the idea of the Torah that there is such a thing as tshuva, which is to say that, I'll show you a good analogy. The analogy, in my opinion, the attitude towards chet and tshuva should be pretty similar to the relationship between disease and cure. There are some serious diseases out there, and even not so serious ones, that they have cures for. There's treatments, and they're always discovering more treatments. But I don't think that the average individual's attitude is that he should maintain his health, basically. And serious, we're talking about heart disease, we're talking about diabetes, we're talking about cancer. Now, assuming that there's treatments for all these things, it would be a fool who would engage in all the risk factors and saying, what's the problem? I have no fear. If I get cancer, so I'll get chemo, whatever it is, that type of thing. Now, eliminate the factor. I know that may be a poor example because you'll say, well, it's not that guaranteed. But even in those cases where they've really brought it under control, very few people, that attitude, a person might risk a cold or something very minor, and he's not concerned because if I do get a cold, I'll get a medicine. That attitude may be all right. Even there, most people would be against it. But it's foolish to endanger your body in any way just because there's a cure. The idea is that disease, illness, is an evil. It's bad. But if you do get it through no fault of your own, or even if it's through a fault of your own, then you go for help. But you don't sort of equate the two. In other words, the fact that there's a cure out there doesn't negate the idea of illness. Everybody has a concept of illness. The same thing would be that a person steals money. I mean, according to Allah, in America you go to jail. But let's assume that the penalty was to pay back. To pay back with a fine. Paying back in and of itself is restoring the money, but that's not going to be a deterrent because you have nothing to lose. So there's got to be a fine. And that's the punishment. Whoever steals has to pay back and a 25% fine of whatever it was they stole. So there again, I mean, if a person would take the attitude, okay, he's going to come back, we'll just break at the banks, and when he needs money, he'll pay it back. We'll just pay it back. That would be a complete breakdown of the whole system, obviously. So that's the idea over here, that a person with that type of a mentality is not going to ever do tshuva. Because he doesn't really see chet for what it is. If the person recognized chet for what it is, he would recognize it as, in the same way he recognizes illness and disease as being a terrible evil. The truth of the matter is that he would recognize chet as being worse than a physical illness, but that's asking a lot of a person. In reality, an intelligent person would recognize that because the more significant the element, the entity that's being afflicted, the worse the condition. So the body is less significant than the soul. The body is a means to the perfection of the soul. So a disease that afflicts the soul is the worst thing of all. So a person should recognize chet is the worst thing of all. That's the primary attitude that a person has to maintain. All right, so then nobody's perfect. It says in Kohelet that there's no person that lives and doesn't sin. That's a truth, that nobody's perfect, and life is a struggle, and there are moments of weakness where you're overcome by the Yetzer. So then, after that's said and done, then you have a path of tshuva. But that's different. The person did not undertake the life of sin because of the phenomenon of tshuva. If that's his attitude, then that's it. Very, very difficult for that person to return. Because it's a complete breakdown and a lack of a recognition of what the whole phenomenon of chet and tshuva is. Mainly, I would say, of chet. The basic mentality of a person that would say, I'll sin and then I'll pay it back, is like a childish type of a mentality. That it's just a system, an arbitrary system of rules that most people have this attitude. That there's no real benefit. If you study that mentality over there, you will see that it has to be this way. That a person is saying there's no real benefit in the mitzvah. It's just a system, it's a religious system. So you've got to, so to speak, pay your dues. And every system has its do's and don't do's, and they're arbitrary. This is a very prevalent mentality. It's totally contrary to the truth that it's l'tov loch kalayamim, that every mitzvah is really extremely beneficial in terms of the real perfection of the person. That's the attitude. If a person recognizes that, then the idea of doing a chet, of going contrary to the will of the Creator, is the most horrible thing. But if a person feels that it's a system, he's looking at the system, obviously believes in the system, because if he doesn't believe in the system, he's not going to fail the tshuva. He's saying it's a game over here. It's arbitrary. It's a game and point system. So I'll do the sin. All right. I'll have the benefit. I'll have my cake and eat it too, and then I'll pay my dues. It's in as long as I'm not in arrears. This type of a mentality can exist in many situations. Maybe in a corporation or in a job, you can take off days, you can make them up, you know, or whatever. You're in a, like in the yeshiva, you know, you have a job, you don't do it, you pay a knas, whatever, you know. Up to a point, you can get away with these things. You follow? And in certain contexts, you're right. Like you have certain obligations, certain responsibilities, or you're in a relationship, you know. So you take advantage, whatever, you know, in terms of your spouse, and then you know you can make it up. You buy flowers, this, that. That's part of the game. It's a game. That's because there's nothing inherent. These are just arbitrary and accidental. There's nothing inherent in the various activities that you're supposed to do. But in terms of Torah, if a person recognized what chet is, so he'd be thankful after the fact that there's a way of getting back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you can restore your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But you're telling me that a person is going to rupture, so to speak, to break up a relationship which is the most important thing in the person's life, and that because there's a possibility of doing tshuva. Another analogy would be with a relationship with a person, with a girl, let's say, someone you really, really, really cared about. And there is, of course, after you offend people or a very important business contact, or anybody else that you can imagine that would be very important to you. And it's true that even if the people are offended, even if there are splits, there are ruptures, people do get back together again. Here's a perfect example, I believe. What would you say about a person that acted in a completely stupid fashion in terms of offending? Let's say it was their boss. They had a great opportunity, and they were moving up in terms of their position. And then they were at a social event with the boss, and they got really, you know, really crazy. We're drunk, drinking and drunk. Man, everybody's warning them, like, you know, you have to be careful. And then they walk over and they start like talking inappropriately, you know, disrespectfully to the boss. And obviously, it's a tremendous consequence. Then you get, a few days later, he gets fired. So then you talk to the person, and I can always make it up with him. And then we say, this person's a fool. This person is a fool. You don't do something which is so stupid and harmful and destructive with the idea in mind that you're going to make it up afterwards. It would be absurd. If you saw anybody acting that way, with a girl, you had an opportunity, and then you finally found a girl that you really care about, and she cares about you, and then you do something totally stupid, which everyone tells you is going to destroy the whole thing. And then afterwards you say, well, go try and get back together with her again. Everybody would say, that's crazy. You don't do that. Who knows if you'll be able to get back together again? So anybody would say in any area of life that such an attitude is totally absurd. So that, but when it comes to Torah, in my opinion, the mentality of a person that would have such an attitude would be complete misunderstanding, complete lack of understanding of the nature of chet, and the nature of chet, and the element of distancing yourself from being in the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That would be the most horrible thing nobody could ever sin. Except we're understanding that we're human beings and we're not always cognizant of that, and then we act foolishly. But now with a cheshbon, we act foolishly. Yeah, we sin. That's what we say. We say in all the slichos that lanu boshes upon him, that we acted, we after the fact we recognize how stupid we were because we allowed our emotions to sway our judgment. But that's different than the person who says echta v'yosha. However, to answer the question, well, as I made before, the point that a person should, I think the very idea of this chapter communicates to us the idea that a person should consider not just the consequences of the chet itself, but should consider the distance, the possibility of tshuva entailed in that chet. That's not to say that the person's taking the attitude of echta v'yosha, that I'll sin and I'll return. No. That's a different type of mentality. Here's a serious person that takes the Torah seriously and takes Averos seriously. However, we're not perfected and we're overcome by emotions. And we have to fight. In terms of fighting the battle against the Yetzer Hara and not giving in to the temptation or to the emotion, so a person should consider all the factors. The seriousness of the Avera should measure what the benefit versus the cost, and so on and so forth, but also should take that into consideration that you may not be able to do tshuva. That is to say that when a person's overcome, it doesn't mean he's saying, I'm sinning and then do tshuva, but he also is cognizant of the fact that tshuva is part of his life. You see, in other words, if a person who was overcome by his emotions and was seriously tempted was told that for this avera there's no tshuva whatsoever, so that would be a sobering element. You follow what I'm saying? That would be a sobering element. You do see, for example, that the Rambam makes it clear that there's no whatever avera, no matter how serious the avera, you can always do tshuva, except, and then he says there's always a machaper. There's tshuva, then some have yisurin, then some have yisurin and kippah, you know, different types of formulas till you get a kafara. Except he says that the person was machal shem shemayim when he sinned, then there's no kafara whatsoever until death. Death is the machaper, the final machaper. So, therefore, these are factors that a person has to bear in mind. That means I'm going to be much more serious, I'm going to be much more sober. Yeah, consequences. When it comes to things that could be a chilul Hashem, a person has to be very, 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 very careful. Because the consequences. So, all I'm saying over here is that before a person sins, he's going to be cognizant of the consequences, and one of the consequences will be, will I be able to have to do tshuva again?
Then you shouldn't do the sin.
But that's not, then you shouldn't do the sin. That's not the same as a person who says, Echta v'yashem.